At the end of the long drive that led down from the chateau, Andrew braked the motorcycle, and then, at a more sedate pace, joined the pathetic little procession that was trickling back from the ridges along the muddy, rutted main road. The butcher's vans, as the field ambulances were irreverently known, were heavily loaded with the fruits of the renewed German bombardment. They chugged through the muddy puddles, with the racks of canvas stretchers and the open backs swaying and lurching to each bump. The blood from the wounded men and the upper tiers soaked through the canvas and dripped onto those below. On the verges of the lane, little groups of walking wounded straggled back, their rifles discarded, leaning on each other for support, lumpy field dressings strapped over their injuries, all their faces blank with suffering, their eyes dead of expression, their uniforms caked with mud and their movements mechanical, beyond caring. Beginning to sober rapidly, the doctor climbed down off the pillion and selected the more seriously hurt men from the stream. They loaded two of them onto the pillion, one astride the petrol tank in front of Andrew, and three more into the sidecar with Michael. The doctor ran behind the overloaded aerial, pushing it through the mud holes, and he was completely sober when a mile up the road they reached the Vad hospital in a row of cottages at the entrance to the village of Mortdom. He helped his newly acquired patients out of the sidecar and then turned back to Andrew. "Thanks. I needed that break." He glanced down at Michael, still passed out in the sidecar. "Look at him. We can't go on like this forever." "Michael is just slightly pissed, that is all." But the doctor shook his head. "Battle fatigue," he said. "Shell shock. We don't understand it properly yet. But it seems there is just a limit to how much these poor bastards can stand. How long has he been flying without a break? 3 months?" "He will be all right." Andrew's voice was fierce. "He's going to get through." He placed a protective hand on Michael's injured shoulder, remembering that it was 6 months since his last leave. "Look at him. All the signs. Thin as a starvation victim," the doctor went on, "twitching and trembling, those eyes. I'll bet he is showing unbalanced, illogical behaviour, sullen dark moods alternating with mad, wild moods, am I correct?" Andrew nodded reluctantly. "One minute he calls the enemy loathsome vermin and machine guns the survivors of crashed German aircraft, and the next they are gallant and worthy foes. He punched a newly arrived pilot last week for calling them Huns. Reckless bravery?" Andrew remembered the balloons that morning. But he did not answer the question. "What can we do?" he asked helplessly. The doctor sighed and shrugged and offered his hand. "Goodbye and good luck, Major." And as he turned away, he was already stripping off his jacket and rolling up his sleeves. At the entrance to the orchard, just before they reached the squadron's bivouac, Michael suddenly heaved himself upright in the sidecar, and with all the solemnity of a judge pronouncing the death sentence, said, "I'm about to be sick." Andrew braked the motorcycle off the road and held his head for him. "All that excellent claret," he lamented, "to say nothing of the Napoleon cognac. If there was only some way to save it." Having noisily unburdened himself, Michael slumped down again and said, just as solemnly, "I want you to know that I'm in love." And his head flopped back as he passed out cold once more. Andrew sat on the aerial and drew the cork from the claret bottle with his teeth. "That definitely calls for a toast. Let's drink to your true love." He offered the bottle to the unconscious form beside him. "Not interested?" He drank from it himself, and when he lowered the bottle, he began unaccountably and uncontrollably to sob. He tried to choke back the tears. He had not wept since he was 6 years old, and then he remembered the young doctor's words, unbalanced and illogical behaviour, and the tears overwhelmed him. They poured down his cheeks, and he did not even attempt to wipe them away. He sat on the driver's seat of the motorcycle, shaking with silent grief. "Michael, my boy," he whispered, "what is to become of us? We are doomed. There is no hope for us, Michael. No hope at all for any of us." and he covered his face with both hands and wept as though his heart was breaking.